We've known our next guest for more years than any of us want to recount. And in all that time, I have never taken umbrage with him.
Oh?
Uh-oh.
Tonight, I have to take umbrage with Joel Daly. I believe that's the... You have loused up our dinner so much.
I know.
Joel, we're having the worst time now. Because with our schedule, we always used to, 4 o'clock, that's when we're eating dinner, there's Joel, and no Joel now.
I know, it's sad, isn't it?
Look, he's crying, big crocodile tears.
It's been a good run, Steve.
Yeah.
It's nice to leave on top, it's nice to leave on my own terms, and it's nice to have other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, you were 38 years?
Almost 38 years with Channel 7, exclusively here in Chicago.
That's amazing.
51 years totally in broadcasting, so I was just a kid when I started out, 17 years old.
Yeah, my goodness. I said to Steve the other night, I said, well, it's been a couple of weeks now since you've retired.
Right. I hate that word.
Well, yeah, and that's my question. You went on a cruise. Has it sunk in?
No. Got back from our Mediterranean cruise on last Sunday, and we're a little jet-lagged, obviously, but I got up on Monday morning. I said, I don't have to go to work. What am I going to do?
Oh.
I usually ran in and did the soap opera update on Monday and all those important things. But I'm getting reoriented.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's going to be okay.
Because you, right out of college, I mean, you hit the ground running.
I was actually in college when I started in broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I haven't stopped since.
I
haven't lacked for a job, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I'm not just stroking you when we say this, but Johnny and I talked about this on the air. Your last week was very close to when Dan Rather was retiring, and in our minds,
I said it on the air.
I
said they're making all this to do about Rather leaving. I said, big deal. My Joel's leaving.
Boy, they sure did give me a nice royal send off. So great party, and then a final evening to say goodbye. And Linda was so gracious and to do all of the things that she thought I would enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Had some members of the Christmas Spirits show sing a song for me that they had written.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a show you've been doing every Christmas for some
time. Oh, yes, and I'll continue doing that.
Oh, great.
Some outlet to go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I love the promos that they put together for you, too.
Except some people thought I'd passed away.
Oh, dear, because they were kind of solemn.
You know, they were talking about, we're going to miss you, Joel, da-da-da-da. And I didn't appear in that particular spot, some people say, well, the poor guy must die.
Oh, dear. Because I'm sure it was difficult for whomever it was that was speaking to me, all happy. It was like, that's funny. But they were very tasteful.
People at Channel 7 are marvelous. Anyway, that's why they're number one.
Yeah.
Emily Barr, my boss, my former boss. I guess she's still my boss.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her today. We were shooting something out in front of the station, and she used one of my lines. Didn't you used to be Joel Daly?
Oh. Now, you will continue to do things over Channel 7?
She graciously has asked me to be their, quote, legal analyst, something I couldn't do while I was an anchor person, which was to give opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Michael Jackson jury gets all tied up or something like that, I'll go in and try to explain it to people.
That's great.
And maybe some documentaries, because we liked the one we did on Richard J. Daley.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was really
excellent.
A very nice way to go out with that one. So I'll be doing stuff, and then I'm working with Jonathan Towers, a talented man who has a great production company here in Chicago and does the A&E things like American Justice and Biography and some of those other shows that are so good and so good, creative. And we're trying to produce a show called Chicago Justice, which would be about the great Chicago trials and lawyers and the lore of this town.
Oh, yeah.
And we hope to find a place to put it on the air and someone to help pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
What a great idea.
Yeah, it really is. Everyone likes the idea. But I don't have to tell you, there's a lot of production dollars involved.
Sure.
And we're in the midst of doing a demo right now.
But sadly,
that's what I say. I shot something this morning. They had me leaving the Channel 7 front door and walking along State Street and some other shots, and then walking into the door at the John Marshall Law School, which mm-hmm. is where I'm going to have an office and do some work for them.
Uh-huh.
So they're very excited about it, because the way we would tell the story, and we've already done this in at least a pilot sort of way, is I would teach a class called Chicago Justice
mm-hmm.
and have these bright students who know the facts of the case and the trial and the people involved, you know, the principals. And through my Socratic questioning and their comments will help tell the story with the young people. And, of course, the law school loves that.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful concept. I want to see this now. What a great concept.
Well, we hope to have it up and running by the first of next year.
Yeah. Too bad it costs money, and obviously it does, but sadly we've got so much material to work with here in Chicago.
Whoa. I was thinking we have the distinctive Chicago architecture. We have Chicago this, Chicago pizza.
But, I mean, just the crime.
But, wow. And we've had some of the greatest lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Still, oh, of course, yeah.
And we're going to do things, or we intend to do, stories that go back to the Haymarket Square trial.
Oh.
And that sort of thing. So we'll do some real historical kinds of adventures.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed
yeah.
that we see that. That's excellent. So you will be teaching then?
Well, I'll be teaching that class or something similar in mm-hmm. Media law, First mm-hmm. Amendment law, which I really will enjoy. I'm an old flight instructor, and I was always so rewarded when my student actually soloed and didn't crash the plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stand on the runway and say, please, get the wing up,
Mm-hmm.
It was very rewarding then to see a person learn something and be so thrilled about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to the teaching and all of the other stuff.
You have done so many things, from your involvement with the law, or flying, or singing, or an even number of things.
Theater.
What haven't you done that you're thinking, you know, maybe I'll try and fit in the day to do what?
Well, I thought about medical school, but I'm with my hands a little shaky. Now, I, when you continue to learn, continue to study, continue to try to improve your mind and your knowledge of the world, it's just very exciting, because you keep going, you keep finding things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure somewhere along the way I'm going to find a book I can write, or another play I can do.
Mm-hmm.
I am available, by the way. I no longer do the 4 o'clock, so I can be in rehearsal all afternoon. But there's so many theaters here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, so I'm looking forward to doing all that stuff.
For your downtime, are you a reader, a painter, or a walker?
Well, I work out to try to keep my weight off and stay fairly healthy, I like to golf. I'm not very good at it, but I'll have more time to work at it now.
Have you dabbled in painting? You strike me as a painter. Maybe it's the shirt you're wearing tonight.
Yeah, very cool shirt.
Yeah, I'm wearing a Guayabera, I guess it's called. No, I've never tried that.
I'm quite serious. If we talk to you 6 months from now, you say, yeah, you know, I'm a little tied up. I've got this painting thing going. I would not be at all surprised. I've got a gallery showing coming up.
I get the feeling you're kind of like Spike Lidell. By that, I mean, Spike is one of these people who literally one day, many years ago, he mm-hmm. said, you know what, I think I want to try painting a little bit. 2 weeks later, he walks in with these wonderful paintings.
Really?
He'd never painted a lick in his life.
And then he gets into photography.
Yeah.
And then
and he says, you know, I think the world needs a special software so that we can make pictures look like oil paintings.
Wow.
I think I'll make that. What?
Wow.
How does my mind work like that?
But I get the feeling you're kind of like that. If you focus on something, that you really get into it.
Oh, I do that. Yeah. Someone said, what's the you know, the most interesting story you've ever done, or the most interesting experience? And my answer has always been, and it's been totally honest, whatever I'm working on then is what I'm excited about.
Mm.
And I try to make it, and I usually think it is one of the best things I've mm-hmm. ever done. So, you know, and then I get on to another project. Oh, this is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's no one thing that sticks out.
Well, let me take you in just a little different direction. You talked about how now you're going to be occasionally called in on Channel 7, and mm-hmm. you'll be able to talk about some of the trials and give the kind of opinions that you
right.
couldn't give as an anchor. Is there any one story that stands out as you look back on your career as having been a little bit frustrated because as an anchor you had to be straight and just give the facts of it when you wanted to say, boy.
Oh, there have been a number of stories like that. I certainly the most tumultuous story I ever covered was the 68 convention, mm-hmm. quote, disorders. And I was a little frustrated then, although I was doing personal commentary, mm-hmm. and I was able to give my opinion on what I saw, which wasn't always what the national media people were seeing and broadcasting. Mm-hmm. But that was a very exciting, a very... maybe that's the wrong word to use, exciting. It was just an adrenaline-filled week. Go down, do an early show, go down in front of the Hilton Hotel and watch what was going on, go back and report it and write about it. Mm-hmm. It was one that'll stick with me.
Yeah.
Now, you'd been here a year at the time.
That was one year.
Right.
Fahey and I had been united earlier that year in 68, but he was ill that summer, and so I'm doing it all alone.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I was working weekends, too, so I mean, we didn't have anybody else.
So you were an anchor reporter.
Anchor reporter, commentator. Yeah.
And this big, big story, a little bit of history for Chicago, for people who are too young to remember the 68 convention. This town was in upheaval. It was scary, but at the same time, you knew that history was being made, and you knew we were going to survive it, but you didn't know what was going to be on the other side. It was just...
Well, and I saw things, as I say, that some of the national people didn't see or didn't want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it became very polarized.
Because of the people that, the contacts that you had here in town?
Well, it's just that I watched both sides, and not to relive that whole tumultuous week, but I saw how the police were provoked.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And actually injured, and so I reported on that, and other people were just talking about these poor kids getting hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which they did, and which shouldn't have happened. But some of, you know, I'll never forget that Wednesday night when everything went crazy. I was in front of the Hilton on Michigan Avenue, and I walked over to this line of protesters and started talking with some of them and watching what they were doing. And a number of them were putting Vaseline under their eyes. And I said, why are you doing that? They said, for the tear gas. They knew it was coming, and they knew they wanted it to come.
Because mm-hmm.
all the cameramen, including mine, were there.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there was a mindset on both sides that certainly was a volatile mix.
So you were 1 year here as anchor newscaster, right. And you'd been teamed with Fahey Flynn at that point.
Right.
We hadn't moved into the format that Channel 7 became legendary for.
Oh, yeah, we were doing that.
Was
yeah,
really?
We did that from the beginning.
Okay, from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because that was the goal of teaming the two of you together. Kind of the father-son, was that the approach? you didn't tell Fahey that, though, did you?
My wife said, Dick O'Leary, the then general manager who hired Fahey, because I had already been there 6 months, and he was committed to a two-person anchor team, because that's what my partner in Cleveland and I had successfully started and engineered. Mm-hmm. And he saw a tape of it and he wanted to duplicate it or replicate it here in Chicago. So he took my wife and I out to dinner and he said, I've hired Fahey Flynn. And we knew who, of course, he was. We watched him on Channel 2 at that time. And my wife says, it'll never work. A father-son Irish team? I like to say it's the only time she was wrong, because it obviously did work. But it wasn't an idea how your father-son it just looked that way.
And it's not that Fahey was a senior citizen either.
Well, he always was gray.
He was.
And he had only in my 30s at the time. Yeah. I think
he had that fatherly way about him, too.
Yes, oh yes.
I think he was 18, he probably looked like that.
Probably, too.
With a bow tie.
He was a great guy. He was a real gentleman. We had some good years. And then I have to talk about Linda.
Oh, my God.
21 years sitting next to that lovely lady. And
is it true that some people have come up to you and they think that she's your daughter?
I'll tell you a story about that. I was doing a show, doing a music show out in Oak. Where was it? Doesn't matter. It's one of the southern suburbs. It was a real, really hot day. Took a break in the middle of the show and stepped down to talk to people, and this lady came up and said, where's Linda? I said, well, I don't know. She's on vacation. Well, where's she on vacation? I said, well, I really don't know. She says, you don't know? Isn't she your daughter? Well, I didn't have an answer for her, but I did go back and tell Linda that story. So ever since, she's called me Dad.
Oh.
And we made up a story how I think I was in the Army in Korea, and I was on the Yalu River between China and Korea, and I found her in a basket in some rushes, and I raised her. That was my story.
That's wonderful. And the poor woman's listening now going, well, there was that chemistry between them, that father-daughter thing.
Well, Linda was my presenter when I was inducted into the Silver Circle, which is when you've worked in Chicago for 25 years or more. The local academy of the National Arts for Television Sciences has this very prestigious award. And she recalled a story about the lady saying, well, isn't she your daughter? And she made the comment that, you know, there is that kind of relationship. We look after each other and that sort of thing. And so there is kind of a family relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that's true.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it 21 years.
21 years with Linda, yeah. 18 with Faye.
Linda had a special relationship with Coach Ray Meyer, too.
Oh,
right?
That was one of her favorite people, yeah.
She adopts all you sweet men. It's very funny, too, because having you on the show tonight, your colleagues have emailed over the past few... We know exactly what time I'm going to be listening on my window from work.
Oh, Tracy Butler.
My colleagues are in bed by now.
Well, it's very funny because some have to get up early for the morning show tomorrow, like Tracy Butler. I guess I'll have to get up extra early so I can hear Joel's voice.
Oh, isn't she sweet?
Oh,
we love
her. She is a doll.
She's just terrific.
And one of our... We just love teasing her because she's one of those people that I think off the air she truly is the person that you see on television.
Yes. Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen, right? You've learned that over the years.
No, I... But you know, it doesn't work if you aren't yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned.
Right. Joel Daly is our guest. Joel, I hesitate to do it, but it's been said before. Living legend, right?
The operative word is living.
Amen. We've locked the doors. He's going to stick around for a while, so stay with us.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio in the studio with us, Joel Daly. But on the phone with us, the man who plays that amazing guitar. I've been cranking that guitar like crazy and still haven't been able to get it to do the things that Darl Dykes does. Hey, Darl, how you doing, buddy?
Fine. How are Steve and Johnny tonight?
Great, Doyle. We're so happy because we get to introduce you to our friend Joel Daly here in the studio.
Hey, Doyle.
Hi, Joel. It's a pleasure.
Well, now,
enjoying the show.
Doyle, you need to know this. You are a collector of all things Roy Rogers, and Joel Daly has done tributes to Roy Rogers for many years now.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Tributes with all the great songs he sang.
Yeah.
The stories behind them.
Oh. We've got to get you a copy of that CD because it's really awesome.
Oh, is that good?
It really is a good CD.
You would love that, Doyle.
And
I'd love to hear it.
Doyle, you collect Roy Rogers stuff. Like Steve, it's one of the things you guys bonded on, your love of Roy Rogers over the years, right?
Absolutely.
And we were saying that you're going to be in the Opry this weekend because it's like the 80th anniversary of country music, and Joel Daly reported on the 50th anniversary.
The 50th anniversary back. I think it was 76.
Yeah.
I was there. I was at the Opry.
With Grandpa Jones.
With Grandpa Jones. I remember that.
I was backstage with Loretta Lynn and all those people.
Well, I was there that night. I remember that night.
Great night.
Of course, I was in diapers. But anyway.
Weren't we all, Doyle?
You're heading from Greenwood, Indiana, down to back to Nashville, right?
Yes, we are. We're going to drive a little ways tonight, and I'm not on the show until later on tomorrow night, but my daughter Holly's coming up, and she's got to take care of some last-minute things for her trip to France next week, moving again. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, she'll be taking the dog and the guitar, and you know all that stuff, and
all the important things.
Yeah,
you got a dog, you got a guitar, what more do you need?
Well, in her case, she needs her fiance. That's why she's going back to France.
Absolutely. And we'll end up bringing him over here, I think. But, I told some folks, I said, well, I don't mind gaining another son, but I'm not going to lose a daughter. We love the folks in France, but, you know, I'd like to have a little closer to home.
Well, there's something happened last night when you were performing out at Hicks Music. You did you did a little bit of a song. You said, and this is for my future son-in-law. And the people around us said, What's that song? Why is it for
and
him?
They came, in fact, I think it was one of the Hicks brothers came up to me and said, what was the name of that song? And I said, The Poor People of Paris.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Listen, oh, now we get it.
Yeah, also known as Gene's Song.
Uh-huh.
And I have a DVD of Chet playing that for Gene Shepherd. And she was sitting there, and it was so funny because they were both so young. And little Jimmy Dickens said, now here's Chester Atkins playing Gene's Song. And she was sitting there looking over at him and with her face in her hands and giving it just cute look, you know, and he was playing that. So it's also known as Gene's Song. So when I'm on the Opry sometimes, if Gene Shepherd introduces me, I'll play that sometimes real quick, just a teaser a little bit.
Joel, did you ever meet Chet Atkins?
No, I never did, and he's always been one of my heroes.
Yeah.
What a picker.
Yeah.
But I actually recorded in Nashville in 76.
Really?
Yeah. Up on Music Row. Well, do you know Scotty Turner?
Scotty Turner, that sounds
He used to produce,
weird.
Like, Slim Whitman.
Yeah.
He wrote with Audie Murphy.
Uh-huh.
Wrote some great songs. He was a guy who produced my little 45s down there. And then I was going down to I think his name was Chilman. Chuck Chilman had a golf tournament during the DJ convention.
Okay. Yeah. Were you? Did you have a band back then? Was that?
Oh yeah.
Oh, excuse me. you probably heard
well,
all this.
Actually, I sang with the Sundowners.
The Sundowners. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Again, we tease him about being a living legend, Doyle, and as he said, heavy emphasis on the living. But, I mean, throughout the years that Joel Daly's been in Chicago, you know, on his spare time, he'd be out there on stage performing with the Sundowners. If he
wow.
wasn't in a play, or if he wasn't flying a plane, or...
And this is when he wasn't anchoring the news. And,
or being a lawyer.
I'm tired.
He's an Renaissance man personified there.
That's right. Wow. And being a dad on top of everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Now, Doyle is traveling with his daughter, Haley, who is quite the singer, and she's got a
new album that's going to be coming out in a couple months.
And will she be with you at the Opry Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, she'll be there. And, I'm doing the Wabash Cannonball, so she won't be able to sing on it this weekend, I don't guess. But we'll have fun. We'll enjoy. She loves the Opry as much as anybody I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Haley feels so much at home there, and it's a great show. We'll have a lot of fun.
Well, we're going to be sure to catch you both. Now, you're going to be on both Friday nights and Saturday nights, right?
Yes, both nights. I think tomorrow night, the Central Time is like 9 o'clock, and then 7 o'clock, and I don't remember the next show. It's probably on our website. I'll have to look and find out.
Okay.
Well, you guys have a safe trip, and actually, you'll probably have a safer trip since Johnny and I are not trailing you because we managed to get you real lost out in Aurora last night.
Oh, it was
well,
pitiful.
It's funny too. I talked to the other guys that were there from Taylor Guitars, and Joel, I sure don't want to take your time up here, but. It was so funny. I said, you guys make it okay? And they turned and went west on 88 and went way out of their way to get to Indianapolis.
Oh, no, they were going to DeKalb.
They drove all the way, too. It took them all night long to get there. It was so funny.
Oh, my gosh. They were in Iowa before they realized that the wrong river, right?
It reminded me of Dumb and Dumber, you know, when they did their cross-country.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys, and thanks for keeping us up.
Well, thank you. It was nice to see you last night.
And you give Miss Haley a hug from us.
Happy trails to you. We meet again.
Thank you, Doyle. Good night.
All the best, folks. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Doyle.
Bye-bye.
Joel, next time Doyle is in town, we're going to corral you and get you out to see him.
All right.
You would have just the best time.
Because you were just saying that you you returned under the music of Tom Bresch, who's
yes.
one of his
buddies. Yes, he is incredible.
Yeah. They're just scary guys. As I always like to say, when we talk to these guys who we have in the studio, trust me, no smoke, no mirrors, one guy, one guitar.
In fact, a quick story about Tom Bresch. We were asked to be the onstage announcers at the Ryman a year ago for Muriel Anderson's All-Star Guitar Night, and it was a tribute to Les Paul. So Les is there, and one of the people that they bring out while Les is on stage is Tom Bresch. And Tom comes out, and Les is sitting there, and they were going to do something together, and Tom apparently didn't have his guitar plugged in or something like that, and Les makes some comment about, see, you should have had a Gibson. And then Tom gets plugged in, and he plays his guitar, and in the middle of playing his guitar, he flips it over to the other side of his guitar, which also is playable, and he says to Les, try that with your Gibson.
I've never seen one.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
He's got literally a two-sided guitar.
It's freaky.
Yeah.
That's when you wear out one side and you flip it over to the other side. Well, Joel Daly is with us in the studio, and it's fun talking music with you because we know over the years what an important part music played in your life.
Oh, it's been a basic part of my life.
Yeah.
I started playing the trumpet when I was in second grade. Played trumpet all the way through grade school, high school, college. Never was quite good enough, although I was first chair. I just had to practice.
Uh-huh.
The kid sitting second next to me, he could wail. And I realized, I'm going to have to find something else to do. I liked performing,
mm-hmm.
but then I started singing. And, I've tinkered around with the auto harp, the guitar, the harmonica. Never could play it really well enough to keep up.
Uh-huh.
So I just keep my hands in my pocket now.
Yeah, I'll be the front man.
I'm sorry?
And you became the front man, the
yeah,
singer.
Well, naturally.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when did you first, and I know we talked about this when your CD, your Roy Rogers Tribute CD came out, but for the benefit of those who didn't hear it, when did you first realize that that was the kind of music that you truly loved, the cowboys?
Well, see, I grew up in the West, so I listened to country music all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was any other kind.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Yale on a scholarship, I got to go to all the parties because I could yodel. So that was a nice entree.
A yodeling Yaley.
Yodeling Yaley. I never put those together.
That's
the next album title.
The yodeling
Yaley. I like that.
You still going to get in the yodeling competitions?
I won that one here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo!
We did our best to make you the national champion.
I know you guys did.
We tried
that
to stack
the girl in Valparaiso. I don't know what kind of campaign she had going.
It's the little girl campaign, the cuteness factor.
Little girls have done that to me all my life.
See, now, if you'd worn the skirt.
I remember a talent contest, playing the trumpet, doing jokes or whatever I was doing, and there'd be some little five-year-old, little chubby kid, had no talent at all, but she'd go, put your arms around me, honey. Hold me tight. And she would win.
And they go, yay!
Oh, that cute little girl. I hate him.
Okay, the brownies just kicked
yep.
in. Yes!
Good brownies, too.
That is so funny. Well, and again, for the benefit of those who don't know, last year there was a Yahoo commercial that they were mm-hmm. recasting, and they wanted someone to yodel Yahoo.
That's Wiley Gustafson. Boy, is he a yodeler.
He is a yodeler.
And he's out of Conrad, Montana, which is 40 miles from where I worked on a ranch. I mean, I didn't know him, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But isn't that something? That 40 miles apart, these two guys grew up learning how to yodel.
And became nationally known people for.
Well, Wiley's the one who does that Yahoo.
Yeah.
And, he wasn't, I think you guys talked to him on the air.
Yeah.
He wasn't paid. And all of a sudden he said, I should be getting paid for this.
But again, as he said, who knew what Yahoo was going to become back
mm-hmm.
then?
He's a real cowboy. He raises horses in a little town called Dusty, Washington, which is south of Spokane. And he wins the national championships all the time with his horse riding.
Do you ever go back home to your
town? I haven't
town?
In many years.
Yeah.
It's just not really home anymore.
Yeah. They haven't given you the key to the city and named a street after you.
I was inducted into the West Valley High School Hall of Fame.
Good.
Yep.
Okay.
It no longer exists, by the way, the high school. It's gone.
The Hall of Fame is still there.
The Hall of Fame
school.
Is somewhere.
Speaking of home, when you first moved to Chicago, mm-hmm. was there, how long did it take before you felt that Chicago was home? Was
One
it
day.
A, really?
Really?
I told you I worked in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I did that for 8 years. Kind of a provincial town, kind of cold, a little more East Coast than West Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And when the offer to come to Chicago came to me, we were real happy and started our family and had our first house and was really just starting to connect to the people in the community. Took that long. I remember going out to lunch with a bunch of guys from Channel 7 the day I went to work. It was some great corned beef place on the Chicago Avenue. I forget the name of it. But I walked in and the assistant program director said, "Well, Joel, enjoy this day. This will be the last day you're not recognized." Mm-hmm. And he was right. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chicagoans take you to their bosom.
Yeah.
And they either like you or don't like you. But if they like you, they like you a lot and they're loyal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've really learned in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. There's nice people. Just, I mean, I'm their friend. And mm-hmm. isn't that a nice feeling?
Yeah.
Do you think that that's one thing that some network programming, quote, consultants don't understand about this market? That this market, probably more than any other major market I can think of, loves and cares about its personalities.
Mm-hmm. Sure, we don't have the movie actors and the even the stage actors aren't that well known, other than John Mahoney or mm-hmm. some of those guys. But, no, it's... I'm sure they don't understand. And, you know, we got hit with this label of happy talk early on with our news format. And I'm convinced the consultants took this format and spread it all over the country like Johnny Appleseed, not understanding that you don't just put a couple guys together, or a mm-hmm. man and a woman together, and expect them to connect.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really an evolutionary thing. And, so I think we got the label because there were so many bad people, I mean, bad formats out there were not working. So, again, I'm starting to get nostalgic now. I look back on actually making television history in a sense and growing up with the business.
Mm-hmm. So and you were at Channel 7 at a time when... not only the personalities and the format, but the technological changes. For example, don't ask me why, but I remember vividly the day that John Coleman's Weather Window was launched, which
he was terrific.
Oh yeah.
You know, when I came here, we didn't even have color cameras. We had them in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have them at Channel 7. I said, "What is this? The last of the wood-burning television stations?" About 6 months later, we got color cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, the technological. I think technology has kind of spoiled television news because we go for the live shot and the helicopter shot, which mean nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually. But we're overwhelmed with the idea we can go live anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Still astounds me. I remember Telstar.
Yeah.
First transatlantic transmission.
Well, let me take you back, if you don't mind, being nostalgic for a moment. Back in, let's say, 69, an event like the 68 convention.
Right.
It's an average day for Joel Daly. Would you come into work and they'd give you an assignment, even though you were an anchor, and then you would go out and work the street? Or would you be given the finished product and you'd work around it? Or how did that...
All of that.
Really?
All of that, yeah.
So you were actually...
I was a street reporter.
You were actually pounding the pavement.
And then I wrote my commentary for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of my workday, is getting that done. And that was really kind of my identity, that mm-hmm. I wrote, and I could experiment. I could write poetry. I could do a drama. I could
mm-hmm.
or do a serious commentary. And it was a way to tinker around and write. So it was... I was sorry when they went away. But so was I. Yeah, but they were a lot of work.
Now, did you actually write the story that you were covering?
Oh, yes.
You
always,
did that, too. That's amazing.
That.
That's not happening
anymore.
No.
Well, that's not true. I mean, the special beat reporters and so forth.
It's not the norm for the anchors.
But they'll have a producer.
Right.
Who sets everything up and then does some of the writing, or at least points out the part of the tape they could use.
Yeah. So you were completely hands-on at that point.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be.
That's incredible. Sure, yeah. Because it's your name on it. That was always my thought.
That's right.
Your face in front of the camera. So if it fails miserably, we're going to go, that Joel's a big dummy.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go back on tomorrow and say, no, it wasn't me. It was the other kid.
Oh, someone else wrote that for me.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we do so much news. It would be impossible to personally write everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned to rewrite. Basically on the desk, I mean, as we're reading it.
Oh, so it's your, then it's your style.
Yeah, well, at least I get the grammar right, I think.
Right. Okay.
Well, let me give you a chance to pontificate for a second.
Okay.
The proliferation of news, cable and all over the place, do you think that has helped or hurt news? And where I'm going with this is because sometimes I'm watching it and it's Fox and CNN and MSNBC and everybody's trying to jump to be first, and I kind of wonder, they may be first, but are they being accurate with what they're covering?
Or how many car chases can you watch that don't end up, I mean, that end up being very little news value? Yes, I think the proliferation has diluted the product.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best way to put it. And I use this word in its broader fashion, the entertainment value of a story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times do we have to go out to Santa Maria, California, and watch Michael Jackson with the umbrella? Because there's news value to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, we see him. And all those legal analysts, as a lawyer, I just go nuts. They're second-guessing the actual trial lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is, and this is not just for that particular story, but almost all stories are told in terms of a war. So-and-so is winning today. So-and-so mm-hmm. is losing today. So-and-so is fighting today. You know, can't we all just get along?
Rodney King. Do you believe it?
And words to live by.
And then there are those stories that maybe it's because we are here 5 days a week, but there are those stories that break, like The Runaway Bride breaks on the weekend, and you turn on television, and you can practically see them foaming at the mouth. They're so excited. We've got something.
Mm-hmm.
We've got something that they don't have during the week, you know? And they're on the edge of their seats and about to bust because this is a story that everybody's watching.
I don't know how the cable news people do it. I mean, they go 24 hours, and they do have to be redundant, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And repeat, and say things that aren't necessarily necessary to repeat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, the whole business has changed, and I'm glad I lived during the better part of it.
Did you ever do morning news, or was that a factor back when you first...
When I was in the Army, I was in Panama, and we had the only television station in all of Central America then.
Wow.
American Forces Network. So I did a radio show, Good Morning, Panama, on the radio, and then I come back on a split shift and do the 6 o'clock news on television. And so I got my taste of, I love morning radio.
Uh-huh.
I had an alter ego that I talked to. I had the drop-in record that I had made.
Okay, I have to stop you. What was your alter ego?
His name was Sab Sturdley. Sab and I would talk about things, and... It worried me because he would say things I didn't know he was going to say. I actually split my personality, and he'd break me up. I haven't done that voice for a while, and I'm getting a cold. So, but at any rate, I had a great time doing that. It was a great experience.
Mark this tape. Joel scared himself.
No, I do talking to Sam. I had a psychiatrist ask me once, he says, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a little worried about me talking to my other personality.
But sometimes I feel that people who do radio are a lot like that. I mean, I've often said, if you're going to have a party, don't invite a lot of radio people because they're really introverted. They're very quiet and basically kind of boring because suddenly they're looking at people eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you get them in front of a microphone and suddenly, you know, they're saying things and doing things and being funny and like... Why can't you be that way when you're... And maybe they'd say they're saving the good stuff,
and,
you know.
And we mentioned before, Bob Collins was the classic example of that. You get Bob Collins at a party, he was the most introverted person in the room.
Painful.
I knew Bob fairly well. I'd meet him on various shows. He'd MC. Mm-hmm. And you're right. He'd ride up on his Harley and shut it down and kind of stand in the corner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a mystery. You know, there are books that will probably be written. We're talking with Joel Daly. Time's just flying right by. We're going to come right back. Got a couple emails we want to sneak in here for Joel. And then we're not going to keep you all night, even though you're looking at your schedule going, what am I going to do tomorrow?
I'm going to sleep in.
Good. It's a good
thing. And then I have a Friday lunch with a bunch of old guys every Friday.
Maybe a little golf, decent weather this weekend.
I'll put them in the car, and then I'm going to drive up to Wisconsin to our house up there.
For the holiday weekend.
For the holiday weekend.
All right,
weekend,
great. Yeah. We'll come back for a few more minutes with Joel Daly.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I just wanted to give Joel a little taste of...
Game. Bound Atlantic to the wide Pacific shore. I went through a parody about this, and I can't remember what it was. I'll think of it on the way home.
Okay.
Maybe your alter ego could sing it.
Sam!
All right, Sam.
I can't do that voice anymore. I haven't done it in 45 years.
Give him some more brownies, Johnny.
I know.
Who knows where we'll go with this?
I want to just quickly say that along with us, CJ, Al, Jim, Jason, and Bob are just a few of the people who emailed tonight to say they agree that their afternoons are just not the same, but they're sticking with Channel 7.
All right.
So, and they're hoping that they'll see you on television again.
I hope so.
And as we were talking on and off the air, for those of you just joining us, Joel Daly is still a very, very busy man. You are going to be teaching.
I'll be teaching.
You're going to be consulting. You're going to be popping up on television from time to time,
right.
Maybe on a more regular basis.
Maybe.
Doing the theater thing.
Yep.
Doing the Christmas...
Christmas Spirits for
Christmas
the
Spirit.
Chicago Bar Association.
That's a fun show, too.
Isn't that great?
You've been doing that for how many years now?
Well, since I was a lawyer, became a lawyer in 1988, so it's about 18 years. 17.
You did the Clarence Darrow one-man show, too,
mm-hmm.
didn't you?
Yeah. I'd like to reprise it.
I would.
By the
like
way,
to.
I'm available to do Darrow. It's a one-man show.
That is a great show.
Oh, that is a great,
fabulous
great story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of, I think, all kinds of interest in Clarence Darrow because, thanks to Richard Crowe, Chicago's Ghost Hunter, he's kind of... I don't know if you know this, but he's kind of developed this. The Chicago is haunted by the ghost of Clarence Darrow.
Well, they go out there every March 13th, out there being the Museum of Science and Industry
right.
in the lagoon mm-hmm. in the back, and throw in a wreath. And I've been out there a couple of times waiting for him to show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, an agnostic, not an atheist. But he said, if there is a heaven, if there is, I come back on my birthday. So we go out on his birthday and wait.
That's in April, because it was just recently.
No, it's March.
March, is
March
13th. Okay, because it's usually cold and blustery.
Yep. Yes,
and
it is.
There's a bunch of guys out there with suits on going, okay,
uh-huh.
Clarence, if you're coming, make it quick.
It was so wild that one night that Richard Crowe came in and he had a video from when he was out there with
a busload of people.
A busload of people, and they saw someone that...
And a long overcoat and a hat.
And they literally, they started chasing him, and he disappeared.
That was me.
Oh, okay.
Funny,
I was doing my Darrow act.
That was the same weekend the show was opening. You know, a little publicity for the show.
Email from Phyllis who says, the name of the restaurant on Chicago Avenue was Braverman's.
That's it.
The best corned beef and pickles. And Phyllis says, Joel, I really miss you. Your smile is contagious. Your humor was great for those not-so-funny days. I wish you the best life has to offer because you have given me the same in kind.
What a nice letter. Thank you,
there
Phyllis.
There are a whole lot of letters like that. And as we say, are you still flying?
Is it no,
something?
I grounded myself shortly before Bob
uh-huh.
had his accident. And I just had a feeling, you know, I've tempted fate enough.
Hmm.
And it was a cold December day, and I had this airplane I built, you know, and I had to go out and start
really?
It, even though the snow and so forth, I didn't want to fly it. I said, this is silly. I've done it. So I donated my plane to Lewis University.
Wow.
It never flew again, but the kids out there take it apart, put it together, and learn how home build is made.
I don't know, in the years that we've talked, I don't know that I've ever asked you this. Is your personality such that you always go with your instincts?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I'm conservative to the extent that I think it through,
mm-hmm.
but usually it's an emotional thing.
Mm-hmm.
At least triggers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like coming to Chicago, you just knew that was the right thing to do?
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah.
I just knew that. It was such... I told my wife, listen, it's an ironic thing. As I indicated earlier, we were pretty well settled in Cleveland. We were happy. had little kids, and I bought a new set of golf clubs. Still can't play, but at any rate, I told my wife, I said, if I get, and I had a offer for a 2-year firm contract instead of a 13-week as it used to be. I said, if I get 2 years on my resume in Chicago, which was then the second broadcast market in the country, I said, it'll be well worth it. So 2 years and 36 more since, it really was worth it.
By the way, I'm going to leave you with an investigative assignment, okay, Mr. Daly. And I want you to bring your legal expertise into this, since okay, you are a Roy Rogers fan, and you mentioned the word trigger. There we were watching the DVD of Son of Paleface, one of the truly great movies of all time.
I love it. Bob Hope.
Yes.
Yep, Bob Hope, Jane Russell, Roy Rogers. Mm-hmm. And I had raved about this to Johnny for years, and finally on TNT we had seen the movie, so we know what I'm going to tell you exists. In the DVD, they cut out one of the pivotal scenes, the scene of Trigger playing poker.
This is trouble, and Steve. We have watched this movie over.
We got another DVD.
Yeah,
it's not in the DVD. What happened? Your assignment, should you choose to accept it, okay, find out what the deal is.
And this is sad because we had to watch another copy of the DVD, thinking that maybe ours had been edited. Uh-huh. I said, honey, maybe PETA just got a hold of the DVD and said, you can't treat Trigger that way.
That was a great movie.
Remember, he's wearing a visor, and he's sitting at the Trigger. They've actually got a visor.
I just remember Jane Russell.
I
wasn't interested in Trigger.
In that skin-tight black jumpsuit. Yeehaw!
Yes, indeed. Well, I'll try to find out. By the way, my favorite movie of all time was Electric Horseman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Robert Redford.
When I need a boost, yeah, I just get it out. I mean, that's about a great horse. Hmm. But Robert Redford was so good in that.
He was.
Jane Fonda. And it was, I cry every time he releases the horse.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it 10 times, and I sit there bawling when he says, get out there and be a man, you know?
Be a horse.
Be a horse.
Get out there and horse around.
Well, that's what he did.
And you were raised with horses. I mean,
yes,
this was your...
I was raised, yeah.
Yeah. If you hadn't ventured off the ranch, you probably would have had acres and acres of land.
Is what I would
have. A bunch of head of horses, too.
Yeah.
Wow. It's always a pleasure to have you in
studio.
Well,
it's so much fun.
Thank
now
you.
Now I'm all sugared up.
A little caffeine.
Well, listen, I'll be listening to you on the way home. And thank you to everybody who wrote. And I want to thank my fans. It sounds immodest,
they
but
are.
All of my friends who watched over the years. I'm going to miss everybody, but I'll be back around doing some. I told the people at Channel 7 in the fall they're going to have a street-level studio,
mm-hmm,
and I'm going to be the old guy just peeking in the window, waving now and then. You'll know who that is.
When you wear the overcoat, be sure to wear the slacks. We get very troubled when we look out the window and go, oh no, there's that guy, he forgot to put his pants on this morning. Thank you, Joel.
Thank you. It's
so
always
nice.
Great.
Thanks
to be with you,
Joel.
Take care.